This is Women of Grace Live, discussing issues important to your life and faith. Spiritual insight, practical wisdom. Join us as we transform the world one woman at a time. Women of Grace, for such a time as this. Now, here's your host, Johnette Bankovic Williams.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women of Grace Live. I am Johnette Williams, so very happy to be with you today. It's always a blessing. It's always a privilege to spend this time with you Monday through Saturday as we discuss issues of importance to your life and to your faith. What a beautiful opportunity we have to use these airwaves for the glory and honor of God, and I certainly do hope that you make the best use of them. Indeed, you know, we always ought to be about the business of digging more deeply into our life of faith, looking more intently into our own hearts to achieve union with God, asking Him to imbue us with His own divine presence, that everything in us might be healed and brought into accordance with His holy will. Because you see, ultimately what God desires is union with us. He desires to give Himself to us completely and totally. As a matter of fact, that is His posture towards us. He is always about the business of giving Himself to us, but we must receive Him. And to the extent that we allow the sweet presence of the Holy Spirit, I always believe, through the maternal beatitude and intercession of our Blessed Lady, to be restoring us, renewing us, healing us, bringing us into that freedom that is meant to be ours in Him and through Him, to that extent are we able to receive more of Him and, if I might say, retain more of that reality of His divine life within us. I often picture our hearts like a sieve, you know, a colander into which you pour spaghetti noodles, and you'll rinse those noodles off with water, and the water will seep through all of those tiny little holes that are in that colander. And, you know, when we think about this in light of God, we might think of our hearts as being this vessel that contains Him. That water is not able to be contained within the colander, within the strainer, because it's filled with all of these holes. It's not the faucet's fault. Certainly isn't the water's fault. It's the fault of the holes. Now, the colander has a perfect use for that, but in terms of our own life of faith, if our hearts are like that colander, if God is constantly pouring His divine life into us, but it's seeping out through those wounds of the heart, then certainly that heart, not being a colander, but rather being a vessel that's meant to contain the whole of Him, that heart then is not able to grow and to expand with His presence, not able to grow and to expand with love. And so what the Holy Spirit wants to do is to come and to suture together all of those little holes, all of those fragmented parts of our being, making them resilient and strong with cords of grace, that we might contain more of Him and more of Him and more of Him. We often wonder about this, you know, in light of our purpose, in light of our mission, and the Baltimore Catechism, which I'm so often quoting here on Women of Grace Live, gives us that purpose, gives us that mission, and states it clearly and without exception, that God created us to know Him, to love Him, and to serve Him in this life, and to be faithful and to Him in this life, and to spend all eternity with Him in heaven. So God's destined us for eternal good. He's destined us for life. He's destined us to know Him. He's destined us for union with Him. And this is why He sent His Son, so that we might behold, in a sense, the face of the Father, who is pure spirit. We might behold in Jesus the semblance of God Himself, to make it easier for us to come into this union with the One who is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And so everything about God is meant for our flourishing, everything. And so within the church that Jesus Christ Himself founded, our Holy Catholic Church, when we look at social justice issues, we see that everything is oriented toward this reality, the reality to help us flourish in Him. And so even the social justice of the church is oriented around this reality, human flourishing. All of our social teaching is meant to be for the good of the human person, because every human person, from the moment of conception until natural death, has dignity, has value, has worth because God chose that person to have life, that person might spend all eternity with him in heaven. And so the divine pleasure of the Father is for us to be able to achieve that. And while we are on this face of the earth in temporal time, moving through this pilgrim way, to the extent that we work for human flourishing, to the extent that we appropriate properly the dignity and the value of every human person from conception until natural death, to that extent do we grow more like unto God himself. And to that extent, we begin to experience the happiness of the Trinity itself within the confines of our own being. As Catholics, we are called to promote the worth, the dignity, the value of every human person. From the moment that sperm meets egg and God imbues into that union an immortal soul, we are called to safeguard, to protect, to nurture, to value, to work on behalf of the one who has been conceived. And we're going to be talking about these matters today with our guest, a marvelous man of God, a doctor, obstetrician gynecologist whose entire practice is oriented toward the good of the mother and the good of the baby. He's going to share with us how his own life came to reflect that truth, how he continues to live it within his own personal reality, and how he hopes to bring it to so many others through his practice, but also by being a type of trumpeter for this cause in the world today. So we invite you to stay with us as we explore this topic with our guest. He's going to be with us after we go to that very first break. And, you know, I just want to share with you a few paragraphs from the Catechism of the Catholic Church that speaks back to what we were talking about a moment ago, and this beautiful, beautiful truth about you and this beautiful truth about me. And in paragraph 1934, it states this: created in the image of the one God and equally endowed with rational souls, all men, and I draw your attention to the word all. There is no exception to all, is there? All is what? All inclusive. All men have the same nature and the same origin. Redeemed by the sacrifice of Christ, all are called to participate in the same divine beatitude. All therefore enjoy an equal dignity. Isn't that beautiful? It's absolutely glorious. And that is the hinge upon which the social teaching and social justice in a Catholic understanding swings. We read this in a paragraph a few before 1929. Social justice can be obtained only in respecting the transcendent dignity of man. The person represents the ultimate end of society, which is ordered to him. And here now it quotes John Paul II and says this: what is at stake is the dignity of the human person whose defense and promotion have been entrusted to us by the Creator, and to whom the men and women at every moment of history are strictly and responsibly in debt. My brothers and sisters in Christ, we owe a debt to our brothers and sisters who are with us here on the face of the earth at this moment in the history of man. And it doesn't matter where their geographic location is, whether they be in the deepest, darkest jungles of Africa, or whether they be tucked into the highways and byways of India, whether they populate North America, or whether they are located in the womb of their mothers. We owe them respect. We owe them a debt. And that debt we owe them is their perseverance, their protection, their nurturance. We're going to go to that break. When we come back, our guest is with us right here on Women of Grace Live. I'm Johnette Williams, your host. Stay tuned. Welcome back, friends. You're listening to Women of Grace Live. I am Johnette Williams. Very happy to be with you today. Well, I do want to let you know that today is one of those very special days when we do not take your phone calls because we have a guest with us in studio. And when we get guests like this in, my goodness, I like to devote the whole program to them so that we can really explore the topic together. I was sharing with you prior to the break that we were going to have a guest today and that we were going to be talking about life issues, but in a very practical way. We were going to be talking with our guest, Dr. Christopher Stroud, about his practice as a natural family planning obstetrician gynecologist. He's going to be debunking some contraception myths for us today, also giving us a little bit of his background. And he's going to be sharing with us some realities that I don't think we often consider, especially in a world that is totally saturated with the message of reproductive rights. But we're going to be setting the record straight today with our guest, Dr. Chris Stroud. Dr. Stroud, welcome to Women of Grace Live. I'm so happy to have you with us.
Well, thank you. Good morning, and I'm happy to be here with you.
Well, thank you so very much. You know, I did a little research on you, and I went out to your Facebook page and to your website, and I was very pleased to see that you are a big supporter of the Florida higher education system. And you're one of those rare birds, I think, you know, who must split allegiances when the Seminoles are playing the Gators because you've graduated from both schools.
You know, I'm so old, and when I was in college, you know, they just barely had electricity back then. So I've sort of forgotten some of the rivalries between those two big schools. But in a plug for the higher education of Florida, I've just finished a visit at Ave Maria University where my son is a freshman, so I'm still supporting them.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And that was very fun to read as well. You're out there in Fort Wayne, Indiana today. And, well, not today, but that's where your practice is located. And, you know, I just want to let everybody know that within your own area, I'm quite certain that you will be able to find a natural family planning obstetrician gynecologist. But for those of you in that area, I certainly do want for you to get in touch with Dr. Stroud if, in fact, you have any need for an OB-GYN. And, you know, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about the way in which you determined for yourself that God was calling you into a new direction with regard to obstetrician gynecology. I mean, you've made a couple of changes in your life, starting off as a practicing doctor and then practicing medicine through administrative skills and then back into patient-based outreach. And here you are now. You've made this change some years ago. So
said differently, God paints with a crooked pen sometimes.
Well, I don't know. I think that everything accrues to the good. So I'm quite certain everything's impacted in a positive way.
Yes. You know, my conversion to what I would call an authentically Catholic practice, I tend to think that I had very little to do with it. I was troubled with the fact that I was practicing in a way that was inconsistent with church teaching. But like most physicians in my position, I felt like I really didn't have a choice. And in an arrogant sort of way, I think that I thought I had a physician exemption. I mean, you can't be a police officer if you don't carry a gun. You can't be an obstetrician gynecologist if you don't tie tubes and prescribe oral contraception. So I was struggling, but that struggle came to a head in all places in the confessional with a very amazing holy priest.
Really? Well, I'm not going to ask you to share that confessional material with us, but I will ask you to do this if you can. You know, what was the you know, obviously this confession had a tremendous impact on you, but how did you begin to reconcile then the need to move forward in this way?
Well, it was simple. The priest told me I had to. He said, you've got to make a change, and you've got to make a change today. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if there are priests or seminarians listening, as I'm sure there are, I try to say to them whenever I have the chance, be bold within that confounds of the confession, because this priest's boldness to step out and say to me, you're wrong, you've got to make a change. Now, he took a chance in saying that. I could have reacted in an angry sort of way, and human nature being what it is, that'd be very uncomfortable. But he stepped out and he said, you've got to make a change. Go see this other physician. So I met with another physician named Dr. Patrick Holly, who I knew for some time was an authentically Catholic doc, and he did something unusual over there in the natural family planning world. But I met with Dr. Patrick Holly one night, and he handed me a large print copy of Humana Vitae. And I thought, oh, you know, another piece of bedside reading, right? More research to do, more reading to do. And he says, you need to read this. And I was about to put it in my briefcase, and he said, you need to read it now.
Oh, my goodness. I love these men. This priest and this doctor are great.
Absolutely. So we're Catholic, so of course we met in a bar. And
human vitae in a bar. Well, I guess it's kind of like theology on tap.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
That's right. And so over some excellent beverages, we started reading Humana Vitae line by line. Now, I know you know this, but if any of our listeners haven't read Humana Vitae, there is no excuse for you not reading it. It's short and it's beautiful and it's convicting. So as we came to the end of Humana Vitae, like everyone I know that's ever touched that work, I was convicted. I was cooked. I was done. I knew that I was going to make a change, and this great physician was going to give me the tools to go and make that change.
I want to ask you a little bit about, you know, just the general tenor of the medical community and their regard for this whole concept of natural family planning. I mean, how is it that they that the medical culture looks or views individuals that have taken the step that you've ultimately taken and the step that Dr. Holly had taken?
Well, you know, there's a fair amount of literal and figurative eye rolling that goes on by both obstetrician gynecologists and just other physicians in general, that it's a little bit on the fringe, that that's not supported by research, that how can you not help women not to be pregnant with contraceptives? And then another whole category would be, you know, well, what do you do about these problems that are traditionally treated, so to speak, with a pill? For instance, horribly painful periods, or as we say, dysmenorrhea. The most common treatment, in quotations for that, is birth control pills. So early on, a lot of my colleagues would come up to me and say, that's really great that you want to be faithful, but what are you going to do for all these young women who have painful periods? Just let them suffer? Of course, that wasn't the answer, but that really was the mindset of, you know, it may be one thing to try to do this, but, you know, after all, the church is old-fashioned, and how could it possibly keep up with modern medicine? So there's a lot of that kind of feeling and sentiment that goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm not mistaken, you know, it seems to me that the birth control has become the great panacea for all women's ills. You know, I mean, no matter what the problem is, give her the pill and she's going to be just fine, which to me, I think, encumbers good diagnostics.
Oh, my goodness. Nowhere else in contemporary medicine is this done except in women's health. So we, for generations in contemporary medicine, we've used symptoms to point to a disease state. We treat the disease state and then observe the symptoms resolving as an indication that we've successfully treated the disease. Everywhere except in women's health. A woman comes and says, I have horribly painful periods. Obstetricians, gynecologists don't ask, my goodness, what could be causing that symptom? We just treat that symptom as though it were the disease with birth control pills. I like to use a cardiology analogy. If you went to your cardiologist and said, you know, doc, every time I get on the treadmill, I get chest pain. And the cardiologist said, it's not a problem. Take two Vicodin before you get on the treadmill, and you won't have chest pain. Most of us would look
at that. You won't be staying on the treadmill either, I'm just saying.
You shoot off the back. Yes, exactly. Most of us would look to that cardiologist and say, but doc, what about my heart? You've just treated my symptom. Mm-hmm. And that would be correct. We confuse symptom and disease in women's health. The symptom is the painful periods. What about the underlying disease, like endometriosis or other mm-hmm. problems?
You know, it's interesting that you say that because so many women regard the birth control pill as being something that is liberating. And yet, if you think about it, you know, it's really rather misogynist, isn't it? I mean, women's health is the only branch that does this. And so she is deprived of a good diagnostic of what her condition really is because of this bias toward the pill.
Oh, it's remarkable. I'm often called anti-woman because of my very public position on contraception. And I always invite that because it gives me a chance to speak back to that in just the way that you've mentioned. I mean, how is it that me trying to get to the basis of a problem and cure that problem, how could that ever be construed as anti-woman as opposed to just putting a Band-Aid on something and sending them on their way? That's very anti-woman in my view.
Yeah, I'd like you to speak a little bit to a statement that you made earlier that, you know, the figurative and actual eye rolling that goes on where doctors will believe that NAPRO technology, which is the technology using the Creighton model, that this whole technology is really non-science. And that couldn't be further from the truth.
Absolutely. That's as incorrect as any position could be. NAPRO technology and the Creighton model, thanks to some amazing people like the founder, Dr. Thomas Hilgers, at the Creighton Institute or the Pope Paul VI Institute in Omaha, Nebraska, have spent three decades studying these problems with reams of data and researched, published articles pointing out all of these problems, whether it's endometriosis or polycystic ovarian syndrome or male fertility issues, most all of which can be addressed and allow a couple to be open to pregnancy if that's their goal.
Mm-hmm. So many myths abound with regard to this topic. I want to get back to some of the practical matters. So here you were and sitting in a bar and you've read Humanae Vitae and you've been convicted. And what did you do after that?
Well, of course, you should be talking to my wife, probably not me, because without her, I certainly wouldn't be sitting here. But I said to her, I think I've got to make a change. I think I've got to become one of those wacky Catholic OBGYNs that don't act like OBGYNs. And she didn't bat an eye. She said, well, we'll probably go broke, but we'll go there together. Let's save up some extra mortgage payments, and we'll go there together. And so I contacted the Creighton Institute or the Pope Paul VI Institute and said, how do I start this training? And it's a pretty long process. It involves about a year and a half or 2 years and a final exam and a lot of project work along the way, which just said to me as a physician candidate, this is important and it's relevant and it's real. Mm-hmm. So I began that journey. And, I like to remember back the very first day of the very first meeting started with Mass. And now I'd spent 20 years in medicine going to medical meetings. I'd never been to one that started with Mass. And so from the very beginning of the first day of the Creighton training, I realized this is something different. This is not going to be the same.
Well, I have goosebumps on that one. I mean, everything good flows from the sacrifice of our Lord Jesus Christ, and celebrating that at the beginning certainly lets you know how deeply entrenched this is into Amen. The life of faith, right?
And, you know, the Creighton approach is really beautiful and simplistic and complex at the same time. I mean, it comes from an understanding that you, as a woman, are designed to be pregnant. You can choose to be an amazing broadcaster, but your Creator designed you to be pregnant. If you are engaging in the marital embrace and you're not pregnant, that means by definition there is something wrong. My job as a Creighton specialist is to find those things, usually more than one, that are preventing a couple from achieving pregnancy, making them right, then making that couple whole. Then they get to figure out, are they called to biologic parenthood or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to talk about some of those factors that could inhibit the conception of a child and look at the model that is established through NAPRO technology, the help that can bring in light of the technological means that so many are using today. But I think that once you graduated from the Creighton School, you discovered quite to your surprise that rather than the practice just, you know, breaking up and falling apart, you don't have enough time in the day.
You know, every little step of faith was met by affirmation from our Lord saying, thank you, I'm pleased with you, you're doing the right thing. Because every little step led to another step, and each step was bigger and bigger. But you're exactly right. When I got back, I sent out 2,000-plus letters to my patients that said, I'll no longer be doing these things, I'm doing this instead. And I thought, that's the end of the practice. We'll just sit and watch it implode. Instead, we got to sit back and watch it explode. I started seeing 4 or 5 patients for every patient that left me because I wasn't doing contraception anymore. 4 or 5 took their place and said, could you help me with this problem? Could you help me with this problem? It was remarkable.
God cannot be outdone in generosity. We give him the smallest of yeses, and he takes that, and he yields just abundant fruit from it, and that's exactly what your practice is showing. And I'd love for our listeners, too, to have a sense of how your practice is oriented. I enjoyed reading about that, and I have questions for you. You know, you've got just a beautiful reality going on there in your practice.
We really do. I mean, we're so, so fortunate. When I started this new practice, my wife and I, who was a certified nurse midwife, thought we would be tiny and that we would never find another physician that could be crazy enough to practice like us. Only a few months went by before another physician contacted me, my first partner, Dr. Angela Martin, who said, I want to be in that thing that you're in. We couldn't believe that. Then we hired another nurse midwife, and then another nurse midwife. And then a few months ago, another physician, Dr. Blaise Milburn, contacted me out of the blue and said, I want to join you. Would you have me? And then within months, another physician, Dr. Jill Stalling, contacted me and said, could I join that thing that you have? So we really have this beautiful, holy alliance, you might say, of like-minded providers who want to provide real, authentic care to women.
It's beautiful. I have to ask you this question. You know, once you made this decision and you moved in the direction to which God was calling you, how did your interior life change?
It's interesting. It changed a great deal, and I don't think I recognized it until the change was over. And the change isn't over. It's still happening. I see things in my children. I have five children. I certainly see things in my three oldest children that tell me that they recognize what we've done. And I can see them taking little steps into their own personal discomfort zones, steps out in their faith to be better witnesses to their peers. And I think it has a great deal to do from my wife and I stepping out that first time. They've seen what happens. And they get to see me do this. I travel a great deal, and I'll talk to a group of five or a group of 500 if they'll listen to me about this journey and about actually authentic pro-women's care. And I think my kids get to see that, and they see that, wow, my mom and my dad are actually doing the things people talk about. Maybe we should do some of those things as well. It's just been a remarkable transformation.
Oh, I can well imagine. And of course, there's so many lessons and insights that you could share with all of us just on how it is that we allow ourselves to surrender to the will of God, to the remarkable truth of the way in which He receives that and does tremendous things in our hearts and in our lives and brings us into that peace that surpasses understanding, that holds us firm in the midst of, you know, just the ups and the downs that go on with life in a broken and fallen world. Well, when we come back, we're going to be talking more friends with our guest today, Dr. Christopher Stroud, inviting you to stay with us right here on Women of Grace Live. I am Johnette Williams. It's a special day today, not taking any phone calls, not even social media, which is pretty rare for us too, but we really want to get everything out of our guests that we possibly can. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, friends. You're listening to Women of Grace Live. I am Johnette Williams. Today we have a special guest with us. Dr. Christopher Stroud is with us. He is an obstetrician gynecologist located in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Ladies, if you live up that way and you want a really good OBGYN, I suggest that you check out his practice. You will not be disappointed. What a great opportunity it is to talk about such matters using the airwaves for that great good today. As I mentioned, we're not taking phone calls. We're not doing social media. We're just spending our time with Dr. Stroud today, but I do want to remind you to get out there to our website, womenofgrace.com. We have all kinds of good resources available for you there. All of our radio programs are archived there for you underneath our Women of Grace exclusive opportunity, as are all of the programs that we do for EWTN television under the name of Women of Grace. So we invite you to get out there and check it out. Indeed, this is an area that we have supported for many, many years. Oh my goodness, going back to the Abundant Life, I think some of the very first programs that we did were on natural family planning back in 1993, and we've carried that theme forward. And it's so wonderful because we continue to learn more and more about the fascinating reality of the female person, may I say. And we have good doctors like Dr. Stroud to help us understand this, especially when it comes to areas of fertility. So I want to go to that right now, Dr. Stroud, because you were mentioning to us the reality that for individuals who cannot conceive, this is not the way that God would plan things to be. It's unfortunate. Sometimes it happens. But oftentimes, there are ways in which this couple can conceive that do not take them outside of the church. So a woman and her husband, a man and a woman, never have to choose against the church when it comes to striving to achieve a pregnancy.
Absolutely. That's such a false position that a couple should never, ever feel as though they're choosing between the beauty and the wisdom of Holy Church's teaching and their fertility. And then you hear that and you think, well, gee, what? I know this couple and they couldn't be pregnant. They had to have IVF. You know, the in vitro fertilization and the lie that it is, when you really look at their statistics carefully and you carve out those women who didn't actually need in vitro fertilization, their success rates are not very good. There's only a few things, thank God, that prevent a man and a woman from conceiving. And almost all of those things are addressable, whether it's problems with ovulation, problems with endometriosis and scar tissue and other things. The vast majority of those we can address, and couples go on to achieve a pregnancy in a natural and ordered way.
Mm-hmm. And so this diagnostic begins with paying very close attention to the cycle of the woman and charting it. Am I correct?
You're very correct. I mean, you know, fundamentally, I like to think of three categories. One, is there a sperm? Two, is there an egg? This sounds like high school biology class, I know. And three, can those two parties get together? And really, essentially every problem of fertility is within one of those categories. And when we evaluate couples, we do just that. We march our way through that list, asking questions in every one of those categories. And it always begins with the Creighton charting method of the menstrual cycle, which unlocks just reams of information to help us understand what's happening in a woman's cycle. You know, men and our reproductive physiology, quite frankly, it's just pretty boring. But women's reproductive physiology is beautiful, complicated, and beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I was first hearing about natural family planning, I'll never forget this. It was on a radio broadcast that took place right here in my own diocese of St. Petersburg, where we had a Catholic radio station, and I was doing radio there, and it was just local at that point in time. And, I had a doctor on, and the doctor was sharing with me all about these things. And, you know, I just, as a woman, I could feel my whole dynamic changing. I sat taller in my seat. My shoulders went back, and I thought, my goodness, you know, we are marvelously made in God. And it seems as though the complication of our reproductive system speaks to that great reality, and yet it's a knowable universe to some extent.
Oh, it is.
And God wants for us to explore that in a way that leads us to discover the reality of what He wants to bring forth from that body. And to me, I can't think of anything that's more glorious than discovering more and more about it. And when husbands discover this about their wives, there's an impact in the marital union.
Well, there is. My wife and I have a chance to speak to high school groups of boys and girls, usually separately. She'll take the girls in one gym. I'll take the boys in another gym. And instead of sneers and giggles from the boys, I get amazing questions. And I can just see the wheels turning as they start to learn more about the beauty and the majesty of reproductive physiology. You can just tell that they're thinking, wow, my wife one day is actually very beautiful and complex. I'm blessed every day when I meet with couples, and I'll say things like I said earlier, that you as a woman are made to be pregnant. Usually when I say that, tears begin to fall. Mm-hmm. Because I can see the recognition on the woman's face that this is the first time anyone has ever pointed that out to them. Now, I also follow that with a statement that's truth. And as we know, sometimes truth can be tough, can it? I say every couple is not called to biologic parenthood. But you, the couple in front of me, don't know because we haven't asked these questions. But the answer could be, and I'm probably the only physician or a physician like me is the only one that will ever say out loud in a complete sentence, you may not be called to biologic parenthood. Our job is to find out. We have to make you whole, and then you'll get an answer to that question.
Oh, what a beautiful approach. And, you know, I think that the reason why the tears spring to a woman's eyes is because in the deepest part of her being, she knows that to be true.
Yes.
And I think one of the reasons why women are so despondent today, unhappy, depressed, you know, taking, you know, antidepressants and things of this nature, is because the culture has caused us to fight against that reality.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, as a physician of 25 years, your listeners need to write this down. Men and women are not the same. We're the same in our value to God. We're equal in our dignity and in our purpose, but we're not the same. Sameness does not mean equality. Anything that makes women less women could be viewed as being pro-women. I just can't grasp that concept.
Hmm. You know, the beautiful truth is that you've helped so many couples to conceive in natural family planning, and the charting method helps many diagnoses to be made that can correct the problem. But conversely, if there is a couple who, for good reason, church-approved reason, if you will, need to delay the conception of a child, natural family planning can also help them to achieve that goal for the duration
of that situation. Absolutely. I mean, you know, fertility management is just that, it's management. A couple can use the Creighton model to decide, do they want to be pregnant today, tomorrow, ever? They decide on a daily basis, are we achieving in our behavior, or are we avoiding pregnancy in our behavior? And as you point out, as long as the decision is for morally licit reasons, a couple can choose not to be pregnant again, or perhaps never to be pregnant, as long as they choose a morally licit method to do that, which is the Creighton model and natural family planning. I have women who have breast cancer or who are on a plethora of medications that conceiving for them is simply not an option. Well, Creighton model is 99% effective at avoiding pregnancy. That's better than oral contraceptives. Even our CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, says oral contraceptives have about a 10% failure rate. You're not going to hear that in secular media, but it's the truth.
Yeah, well, and I think the World Health Organization has also listed it as a Category 1 carcinogen.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it amazes me. If I say to a postmenopausal woman, you should consider estrogen for your hot flashes, she says, oh my goodness, what about breast cancer? But why doesn't a 25-year-old woman say that when her doctor says you should take an estrogen-based birth control pill? It's remarkable how it's a secret on the younger women.
Well, it's sort of like the bifurcation of the medical brain, I think, you know. It doesn't seem to make sense in any way, shape, or form. But there's a lot of myths out there.
Oh,
and a lot of people think that natural family planning is the old rhythm method, or they really don't believe that it's as effective, but you've dispelled that myth. But share with us some of the myths that exist about contraception.
Oh, sure. You know, that birth control pills are treatment for disease states is one of the greatest myths. I mean, endometriosis is public enemy number one in all things fertility. Its only cure is removing the ovaries, that is to say, taking away the estrogen. Yet the most common treatment for endometriosis is giving a young woman birth control pills, which have estrogen in them. It's impossible for me to understand how that could seem like a good treatment. You know, another common myth is that women who have irregular periods, who want to be pregnant, they'll start birth control pills under the advice of their physician to regulate their periods. And they come to see me and they say, well, I'm not getting pregnant. And they're amazed when I say, you realize you're on birth control pills. You're not going to conceive when you're taking birth control pills. Such a myth that making them have a regular withdrawal bleed is somehow going to improve their fertility. And the list just goes on and on. Most women would be so shocked to learn that the published data says that her risk of breast cancer goes up dramatically while she's taking birth control pills. Yet that's a secret. It's never talked about. That's not my wacky Catholic doctor opinion. That's in the research. That's in the literature. One need only look it up.
You know, if you go back, and the birth control pill, I believe historically came to us in 1960, somewhere around there. By 68, Humana Vitae comes out. So it's becoming a point of major contention, not just in the general population, but in the Catholic population as well. And if you look at the stats between the incidence of breast cancer back then versus the incidence of breast cancer now, it's an astronomical increase.
It's overwhelming. It certainly is. And this concept of informed consent, women are not told this. You know, in 2016, it was said to be about an $11.5 billion market for contraception. Mutual funds and aggressive investors see contraception as an emerging market. There's so much money involved. And with $11 billion plus dollars at stake, public opinion can be swayed, and it certainly has been.
Well, you know, and this to me is one of the most egregious realities of this whole pharmaceutical situation. And that is that, the industry is making money on the backs of women, and the suppression of the information about the damage and the effects of birth control is purposely orchestrated so that the market can increase. And I just cannot understand how it is that we as women can look at that reality. And of course, I know this is shocking for many to hear today, so it's the first time you're hearing it, so I'm not holding you accountable. But lots of other women know this and yet still maintain that this is freeing, liberating for women. How they cannot see what's really taking place defies my understanding.
You know, I have the opportunity to speak regularly to non-Catholic Christians, mainly our brothers and sisters in the evangelical realm, and they're beginning to make that connection between contraception and abortion. And once you let yourself begin that journey, it's a very slippery slope in a positive way. And every time I get the chance to talk about that, I see the lights coming on where people realize that the morning after pill or so-called Plan B or so-called emergency contraception, intrauterine devices, even oral contraceptives, are in fact causing abortions some percentage of the time. And I always say to them, what percentage greater than zero are you comfortable with? And I see that look on their faces, and for the first time they're hearing this, and they start making changes accordingly.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, you know, for all kinds of reasons. First of all, and most importantly, because of the will of God and the beauty and reality of the human person that's been conceived, or the zygote that's looking to implant and is rushed out of the body because of the unpleasant, hostile environment into which it's found itself.
You know, you mentioned zygote, and that's just not a word most radio show hosts use. And so
So why don't you define it for us?
No, it's just beautiful that you said it that way. But you know, it's back to high school biology class. The egg pops out of the ovary into the end of the fallopian tube where the sperm are waiting. The sperm fertilize the egg in the end of the fallopian tube. So that is, in mammalian biology, where conception occurs. And if you look at the package insert on Plan B, it says one of its mechanisms is it prevents the implantation of an egg in the uterus. Well, a high school biology student could tell you eggs don't implant in the uterus. Zygotes, or embryos, do. Mm-hmm. Or as we might say, children implant in the uterus. But the company says that right there in their package insert. It's very, very misleading. You know, when sperm and egg meet, there were two things present. The moment they meet, those two things are no longer present, and a third thing is present, which didn't exist a very instant before that. And we call that creation. Isn't that beautiful?
It's marvelous. And I think that it was Alice von Hildebrand who writes in her little book, The Privilege of Being a Woman, which I don't think is in print anymore, but might still be able to be found online. And she says, at that very moment, the eternal finger of God touches the womb of woman, and an immortal soul is placed into that union. Just
wow.
as that. And, you know, I think, I get goosebumps, Doctor, just thinking about, you know, the womb of woman is such a hallowed, holy place. And if you look back in the Old Testament and even into the New, and we see it in our churches, the Holy of Holies is always hidden. It's always protected. It's always veiled. We see that with the Ark of the Covenant. We see it in our tabernacles, you know, and there's two little curtains that you have to open up to find our Lord. And in a sense, you know, the sacredness of the female person, all of her reproductive organs are to the inside of her body. Mm. It's veiled, it's hidden, because yes. wonders take place.
It is spectacular and beautiful. And I've been doing this 25 years now, and it never gets old. It's a beautiful story every single time. It troubles me. How could sperm and egg meeting, creating a new human, ever be a mistake? How could it ever be a failure? A contraceptive failure results in a human person. Those two positions are inconsistent, aren't they?
Anything
that leads to a person can never be construed as a failure.
Right. And as I was saying earlier on, you know, all of social justice, all of social teaching in the Catholic Church is based on the notion of human flourishing. And we have a duty and a responsibility as Catholics to make certain that we are doing what we can so that life can flourish, and life begins at that moment. So our call, our holy duty before God, the most chivalrous act that we can do, is this business of protecting life from natural conception to natural death. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the maladies that women experience so that we can bust open the fact that indeed there are ways to cure these illnesses of women without simply treating symptoms that cause so much damage to their bodies.
Certainly. I mean, you know, two of the biggest conditions that I spend my energy on are polycystic ovarian syndrome, or so-called PCOS, and endometriosis. And I see young women from 11, 12, 13 that have PCOS, that have terribly irregular, heavy periods, often very painful. A young woman just beginning menses really struggles to deal with irregular and haphazard menses, you know, from a social standpoint at school. And so often I meet her mother and she in the office for what the moms will call a safe referral, because the mom is terrified to bring her young daughter to an obstetrician's office because she knows they're going to try to put them on the pill. Mm-hmm. But our office is a safe one. And so then we can talk about this condition. We can make the diagnosis by checking hormone levels. We can evaluate her ovaries with ultrasound and actually make the diagnosis, and then set about the task of treating that disease process to protect her from diabetes later in life, from obesity, from all of the things that go along with PCOS. Just like that with endometriosis, with painful periods. Recently, I operated on a young girl who was 11 and found stage 3 endometriosis. Now, typically, she would have been placed on the pill. Her pain would have gone away. She might have been on the pill a decade or more. Then when she gets married, she stops the pill to be pregnant, and it doesn't happen. Then she meets me or someone like me, only to find out you have endometriosis and your tubes are permanently ruined. But I could have helped you at 11, but I didn't get a chance. That's part of the lie that is covering up diseases by treating their symptoms with oral contraception. Mm. You know, if those two problems, PCOS and endometriosis, went away, I'd have a lot more free time, because they're plaguing women every day across the continuums of their lives, from adolescence to post-adolescence. And there are far too many people that are trying to help them.
Yeah, and I want to talk about, you know, this business of putting young girls on the birth control pill. I mean, their little bodies are just beginning to develop. And what is the long-term effect of this? You mentioned one from the disease itself, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And sadly, the question really is an ask from a safety standpoint. So to turn off a young girl's reproductive axis, as we call it, the signals from the brain to the ovaries, to turn that off, what's the implication for turning that off in an immature, yet not yet fully formed young woman? We don't know the long-term implications. It's never been studied. Those questions aren't asked, sadly. But we know indirectly, covering up diseases like endometriosis and polycystic ovarian syndrome, if nothing else, it allows the diseases to march on in the background and sometimes have devastating, irrevocable effects on the young women and their reproductive health.
You know, I have to say, it takes me right back to the pharmaceutical companies. I just can't imagine the what's the word that I want to use? Just the lack of integrity and ethical practice to know that this is the case, and how it is that they have managed to convert the minds of so many young men and women.
It is remarkable.
Yeah. Are in medical schools continues to baffle me.
You know, I hope our listeners are moved to act. And there's a couple of websites I would point out that might
Please
be helpful.
Please do.
CreightonModel.com is a great one. That's CreightonModel. CreightonModel.com is a great site to start exploring. And there's another beautiful site called One More Soul.
Mm-hmm.
OneMoreSoul.com. And in the upper right-hand corner of that site, there's a search window to find an NFP, or Natural Family Planning-only provider. And those are two great sites for women and their mothers and their spouses to start looking and asking questions to try to find someone that's authentic in their women's health and authentic in following church teaching in women's health.
Well, and I also want to recommend your website as well and your Facebook page, so why don't you give us the info for that?
Well, my website is complicated. It's fertilityandmidwifery.com, and that's MIDWIFERY, fertilityandmidwifery.com. Or if you just Google my name, a lot of things pop up, maybe some not as flattering as others, but you can find me by just searching my name or going to our website. Most of us in the Creighton Model Napper Technology world, because there's so few of us, we do telemedicine visits, we do phone-based consults. We're trying to help as many people as we can. So whether you find your way to me or someone like me, please try to find your way. We'll be glad to help.
And what about for doctors who might be listening today, or those that are involved in this very special branch of women's health? How can they get more information?
You know, contact me. Find me on my website. I'll gladly talk to them. Go to these websites. You'll see how many physicians are actually practicing in a way that's ethical, that's effective, and that's Catholic.
Yes, and all of their practices are burgeoning. Well, it's been wonderful having you with us today, Dr. Stroud. I'm so, so pleased for the opportunity to present this information to all of you, our listeners. I'm going to invite you back another time, Dr. Stroud. I hope you'll say yes.
Absolutely. God bless you and your work. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and God bless you. And friends, we certainly do want to send you to our website, womenofgrace.com. All kinds of good information for you there. If you want to share this program with others, recommend the EWTN app. Bye-bye now.